Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
I have to prune the roses.
Me too.
That's where my brain's at right now. Yeah.
But I need to dig it. Roses get out of hand in a hurry. I just am new to this world. It's a lot.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. They're a lot of work. Kind of a pain in the butt.
Speaking of pains in the butt, hey everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It is the podcast where we try oh so hard to make today make sense.
I feel like these are the days when we can do our best. I'm Molly Wood. Thank you for joining us. And by that, I mean it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, which the show in which you focus us into a few relatively coherent streams of thought. And it keeps us on track and therefore, hopefully, we make more sense.
Did you see the tweet today about this woman who loved when you and I try to cram all our stuff into 15 minutes and we're like racing the clock? She's like, I love that. It's so funny. And I'm like, it's not funny, lady. It's really stressful. We're trying.
You're like, it's not. It's really stressful. We're trying so hard.
Oh my God.
I guess there's a world in which we can make the show longer, but no one has time for that.
No.
Including you, our dear listeners.
The whole conceit of this thing was low lift, low maintenance, just bang it out. Okay.
Yep.
So speaking of banging it out, we start today with a question about vaccines. Here is Mark in California, and this is what he says. I wonder if you could make me smart by talking. Sorry, can I just stop here for a minute? I love how listeners have adopted the title of this show as the tagline. Make me smart.
I know.
Right? I love.
Make me smart.
I wonder if you could make me smart by talking about whether employers will be required. I know.
Hashtag
whether employers
branding.
Will be, oh my goodness, yes, will be requiring COVID vaccinations. I've been seeing surveys that say like 75% of companies do not plan to mandate vaccines. However, I've also seen pre-pandemic schools require certain vaccinations for students to attend, such as measles, polio, smallpox, etc. I feel this is more than just a flu shot, and especially in office settings where people work close to each other, e.g. meat production plants. Super good question. Super good question. Private employers, yes, can indeed oblige you to get vaccinated as a condition of employment at that place of employment. That they can totally do that. But they're not, by and large, doing that because it opens up just a whole can of worms, right? Not only are there the legal sort of morass that you get into, but vaccines can be, in some cases, hard to come by. And let's remember, these vaccines are not fully approved by the FDA, and that is a very, very key point.
It really is, and it does make it trickier for these companies to mandate vaccines. Also, I will say that it's likely that we haven't seen broad-based mandates yet because most companies that sent their employees home to remote work have not brought them back yet in force.
Right.
Like, there are some reopening plans starting to happen for companies. A lot of them are talking about hybrids and, you know, sort of semi-remote work. Like, they're not all talking about return to the office. It's like, what is it going to look like with a little bit of a split? And so it is possible that instead of mandating vaccines, some companies might just say, if you don't get one, stay home. There have been questions about the legality, but just as we started the show, I actually saw breaking news on Twitter that Connecticut just became the sixth state to end religious exemption from childhood immunization requirements for schools. That's been a way that a lot of people who are anti-vax get out of vaccinating their kids. They say it's because of their religious beliefs. And increasingly states seem to be starting to say, no way. And I do think, I mean, it's a different landscape now, right? Because it is empirically way, way, way more than the flu, right? I mean,
right.
So there's no question that there's going to be a different approach to these vaccines. And I'm sure that lots of like HR and legal departments are huddled together right now trying to figure out what that's going to be.
Yeah. The other thing to know is that there are some states, and I think Florida is in this basket, where they are considering or have already passed bills prohibiting companies from mandating vaccines. So this obviously gets political in a hurry as well. Right. So.
Yep. Yeah. So you can imagine why companies are just trying to stay away from it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Justin on Twitter. And for context, it is in light of the news earlier this week that the Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, extended the Real ID deadline from October 2021 to May 2023. And Justin Noggle, which is like the best name ever, wrote in and said, is Real ID, I mean, how great is that? Justin Noggle. I just want to say it all day long. He writes, is Real ID a solution in need of a problem? I honestly don't believe that fraudulent air travel is that high on our list of issues right now. There was just so much interest. There were so many responses on Twitter about Real ID when I tweeted about it, because I was like, can we just make this forever? Because I am one of many people who like only read the first page of the document requirements that you need to get Real ID and showed up with like what I thought would be a perfectly acceptable birth certificate, passport, and social security card. And they were like, oh no, you also need at least two documents with your address on. There was like a whole page two of stuff you had to bring. I think I came in with my passport and my birth certificate thinking like, what more could I possibly need? And they were like, oh, also your social security card and these two documents with your address on it. So, you know, one person wrote to me and was like, I don't understand why people think this is so hard. And I was like, well, it must be great to have to not be unhoused or an immigrant or a foster child or like some, you know, it's so great that you have access to your whole life's worth of documents. Yeah. Or, you know, maybe your utilities are not in your name. Like there are a million reasons that all of this documentation is difficult for people is one place to start. The question as to why we need, quote unquote, need Real ID is that it was passed to address concerns of the 9/11 commission, which thought it was too easy to get a driver's license. So the idea
about that, by the way, that was 20 years ago. 20 years ago.
That was 20 years ago.
And just now we're working on deadlines for this thing. Whatever.
And government, like, P.S., we haven't had another 9/11 in the interim 20 years. Right. So, like, the question that they were trying to address, is it too easy to get a driver's license, has not resulted in a large terrorist attack in America. So I guess like that's a question to ask in terms of need.
Yep.
Once in effect, travelers will be required to present a Real ID compliant driver's license. You could still use your passport to board a flight. So your passport is good enough to get on a plane, but not good enough to use as the sole documentation for your Real ID. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, sometimes when things get delayed this long, they do go away forever. I think that it's great to ask these questions. And people are worried that there are privacy concerns, there are concerns about the documentation, specifically because they could be used to discriminate against or even round up immigrants who show up with all of this stuff. And then also they could become this sort of like national ID that you have to have for everything up to and potentially including voting.
I don't think this one's going away, by the way. Number one, it's the law. Number two, security theater is very politically popular. So I don't think this is going away.
Yeah, we'll see. You know? I'm just stoked because I don't want to do it. I don't have time for that.
Fair enough.
So right, May 2023, Simon. I will take the respite.
That's right. Simon in California sent a question last week related to company earnings. Hit it.
The recent reporting around the Netflix earning results and subsequent stock movement has me wondering, why does the financial press focus on these dramatic short-term changes? Sure, Netflix is down more than 7% since yesterday's close, but it's down less than 0.5% since a month ago, and it's up 4% since 6 months ago. Am I missing the trees for the forest? Thanks for making us smart.
There he is again, making us smart. No, you are exactly seeing the trees for the forest. I would suggest that if by financial news You mean like Bloomberg or CNBC or Fox Business, I suppose. Just retail investors or people just with money in their 401ks or whatever should not be watching those anyway, right? That's not who they're for. And you should not be paying attention to short-term daily swings in the stock market, right? What you want is trends. And yes, you know, on Marketplace sometimes in the numbers, if Netflix has terrible earnings and they – well, they made a lot of money, but they didn't get as many new subscribers, right? So stock went down that day, and so we told you about that. But that's what that's about, right? It's all about the algorithms that cover the news. It's about the algorithms that drive trades. And it's not something that retail investors, honest to God, should be paying any attention to. Check your 401k statement quarterly and move on from there, honestly.
Right. I mean, the reason, of course,
is... And listen to Marketplace. Don't listen to MSNBC and CNBC. Go ahead. Sorry. That's what I'm saying.
I'm sorry. I'm just still reeling from your broadside. But he's right.
Well, you know.
He's right. I mean, look, if you're a day trader, you care. And yeah. That is a segment of the population, too. So I guess the simple answer to your question is, one, because you got to fill like 24 hours of coverage in some cases or however many hours CNBC is on the air. And you got to like have so many clicks in a day. There's that. And then there is also the fact that like there are people and algorithms that make a lot of money off of short-term swings. And so it's really, it's relevant to them. But for you, yes. I mean, you know, you being whoever you are, maybe you're short, maybe, never mind. I don't know who you are. Do what you want to do, but that's why. All right, we got 3 minutes left, so we're going to sneak in one last one, a voice memo, because it's a voice memo from listener Ron.
Hi, Kai and Molly. I wanted to thank you for a great show and reparations. And I have a follow-up question.
No, that was
multiple times, the Overton window was referenced with no explainer on what that is. I don't own a smart speaker, so I can't ask it to have you make me smart about the Overton window. And while I could duck it, I'd prefer to hear you take a minute or two to explain it and what it means for reparations. Could you do that for all of us? Thanks, and love the show.
Boom.
Love you, buddy. Trying super hard not to be like, just look, you could just duck it. However, it is fair. I'm gonna reframe this as, yes, we're doing everyone a favor by explaining this thing. The Overton window is a phrase that I think I first heard from Sam Sanders when he was on our show a couple of years back. And it's this idea, it's used to describe the range of ideas that lie within what is, I think, in some ways considered to be acceptable political discourse. As of recently, it started out as just, you know, part of a series of conversations by apparently the late free market advocate Joseph Overton over in the 90s. Thank you, Marissa Cabrera, for all this good research. And it used to basically be an idea that existed within think tanks. And the belief was that a fringe theory, what is a theory that is now fringe, can easily become tomorrow's conventional wisdom by shifting popular opinion. It was embraced by advocates and political activists who, you know, thought like basically if you just repeat the same idea over and over and over, that can introduce it into the sphere of public discourse.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that it's not a thing that like gets moved. It moves in response to the political conversation we're having, right, about what is politically possible. And it's specifically in reference to reparations, right? The day before Memorial Day last year, reparations were well outside the Overton window, right? Mm-hmm. They were part of the conversation, but they were not inside the realm of the politically possible. The day after Memorial Day, when George Floyd was murdered, the Overton window shifted because of that event and the events of the summertime, so that now we can have a conversation with Sandy Darity and Kristen Mullen at Mullen, right?
I think so.
About reparations. And how conceivably it's, you know, within the realm of the politically possible. Is it going to happen? No. But look, the House committee voted to advance that bill on the commission. So it's the gears are moving and reparations are now squarely within the Overton window. And that's how that applies.
Yeah. Similarly, that's so funny that you say that, because the example that I always think of or was thinking of when I read that article was also related, which was defund the police. Because
that is
very specifically a phrase that causes a lot of people to have a strong reaction, right? And a lot of people to say that is too extreme. That should be dumped as a phrase. It's a non-starter and it's too politically toxic and it's really dangerous and blah, blah, blah. And as even just this year has gone on, you've seen maybe not an acceptance of the concept of defunding the police, but a deepening of the nuance and the understanding around it so that it is not, in fact, a non-starter. It's a conversation starter, just as one example of a thing that seems to be shifting. Okay, sure. Hopefully that is helpful. It's true that wasn't the version you would have gotten on DuckDuckGo, so thanks for asking us to do it. See, everybody gets smarter together. You're totally right, Ron. What Do You Want to Know Wednesday is over. We'll be back tomorrow, though. Keep sending your questions, your emails, your voice memos to makemesmart@marketplace.org because we'll still be reading them.
We will, because the producers make us. That's all I'm saying.
And
boy, it's a lovely day here in LA.
Let's be real.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and Make Me Smart explainers. I'm just never going to call him a digital producer. I'm just not. We should take that out
of
the running.
It's over. Today's program was engineered by Liana Squalacci. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music, which I sometimes forget to say. At the top of the rundown, it says it's called The Informant.
Really?
In case you didn't know or had forgotten. Donna Tam,
oh, cool.
Is the senior producer and the executive director of On Demand is Attorney of Us. Right? How clever is that? They named it The Informant. Our music has a name.
Oh, wow.
I know.
What? You learn something new every day on this program.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.